This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Are you tired of watching national politicians drive us backward over the climate cliff? Look away, because there is a new green growth at the roots. Hundreds of cities around the world are trying for 100% clean energy. You may be thinking Europe or Australia, but American cities are withdrawing from fossil addiction, and not just in California. Jody Van Horn is director of the Sierra Club's Ready for 100 campaign. She is helping to power up America in a more positive way. We will talk about real action to cut emissions. It is happening in cities from Texas to flood-ravaged South Carolina, from New England to California. Plus, we will take a quick look at the Global Climate Action Summit in San Francisco this September. Jody Van Horn, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks so much for having me. It's good to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. I haven't talked to you before, and I do note that Hurricane Florence just put South Carolina back in the news. Your new Sierra Club report says the state capital of Columbia was already a clean energy leader following previous catastrophic flooding events. What was Columbia, South Carolina facing, and what are they doing?
Yeah, it's a sad story. This is the second flood in the last 5 years that the Columbia has had to confront. Back in 2015, they had record downpours and caused all three rivers to flood and overflow into Columbia. So they had a massive cleanup effort from that. And now they've just been hit, of course, with Hurricane Florence. And really what it points to is that the impacts of climate change, like Hurricane Florence, disproportionately harm cities where a lot of people and infrastructure are in harm's way. So after a major storm like this, it's usually the cities that have to shoulder the cost of losses and recovery. And Columbia, having dealt with this now twice, recognizes the role that they need to play in moving to a climate-safe and 100% renewable energy future.
So when I heard about Sierra's Ready for 100 campaign, I thought, good for California. But wait a minute, there are two cities in Texas going for 100% renewable power. Tell us about Georgetown, Texas, and Denton.
Yeah, at the local level, it doesn't matter whether you're Republican or Democrat, red or blue. Cities all across the country are doing this, and they're doing it for a variety of reasons. Some cities are motivated to solve the climate crisis, but others are really just motivated by dollars and cents. The city of Georgetown is a great example of this, where a Republican mayor, Mayor Dale Ross, chose to move his city to 100% renewable energy because it was the least expensive choice. He looked at a variety of bids for power. He compared fossil fuels to renewable energy like wind and solar. And in the end, he could lock in stable prices over the next couple of decades with contracts with wind and solar. And so now Georgetown, Texas is powered, in the heart of oil country, is powered entirely with renewable energy. They've actually already achieved their goal.
Two of America's biggest coal companies are headquartered in St. Louis, Missouri, and it sounds like political suicide to promote 100% clean energy there. How can local politicians in St. Louis overcome coal industry objections when the president cannot?
You know, it's true. 100% clean energy is ambitious for any city, but maybe even more so for a longtime coal industry capital like St. Louis. This is really a response to public demand. Overwhelmingly, in every state in the country and across the nation, people want more clean energy. And in fact, a majority of Americans not only want 100% renewable energy, but they're willing to pay for it. They're willing to pay extra for it, which is just political gold. And so any local policymaker who is accountable to the public interest needs to recognize that fact, that the public opinion is totally behind a goal of 100% clean energy. And I think that part of the reason that you're seeing so much ambition among city leaders is because they want to do what's right by their people. So the city of St. Louis is really an interesting example. We're already seeing the impact that that commitment is having. The electric utility that serves the city, Ameren, immediately responded and proposed a new wind program, a new clean energy choice program to serve the demand of the city. And so we're starting to see, you know, how the commitment has led to immediate action to build new renewable energy for St. Louis.
And Radio EcoShock broadcasts on a lot of stations in New England. Can you give us an example from that region?
Yeah, New Hampshire is actually shaping up to be a real clean energy leader. There are a number of cities across the state, towns across the state that have made a commitment, and they're some of the most ambitious commitments in the country. In fact, not only covering 100% renewable electricity, but also looking beyond electricity to turn the transportation and building sectors into clean energy producers. So they are the city of Concord, New Hampshire, which is featured in our case studies report, recently set a goal to be 100% clean energy in all sectors by the year 2050.
Are some cities in California already beyond the promises stage? What concrete steps, or I guess we should say green steps, have already happened there?
These commitments are already having an impact in California, and California is actually perhaps the great example of the power of city-level leadership rolling up into state-level sweeping change. Nearly 20 cities across California have committed to move to 100% clean energy, and just last week, California became the largest state in the U.S. to commit to 100% renewable electricity by 2045 for the entire state. So that's the fifth largest economy in the world, now on a path to generate 100% of its electricity from renewable sources like wind and solar. And that really wouldn't have happened if it hadn't been for cities being on the leading edge and pushing the political will and the ambition across the state forward.
And California Governor Jerry Brown also announced the state would launch a climate satellite. He was mocked as Governor Moonbeam, but look, I've interviewed climate scientists that are deeply worried about America's aging satellites, and we won't be able to track global emissions and the state of the world environment. Have you heard anything about that?
You know, I actually haven't. I know that there were a lot of solutions on display this past week at the Global Climate Action Summit, which, of course, was in part organized by Governor Brown. So he's still working on that moonshot.
Right. Well, car ownership is dropping in places like Milan, Italy, and Vancouver, Canada. It's already low in New York. I'm wondering if the younger generation, at least some of them, could skip the whole love affair with cars and use bikes and use Uber and use transit.
You know, we're seeing the same trend in the U.S. that younger people are looking to get out of cars and simplify their lives with, you know, walking and biking and public transit. And of course, we need a lot of work to our infrastructure to improve mobility across the board. But we're also seeing a tremendous amount of innovation in the electric vehicle space. And for those that need to drive cars to get to work or rely on, you know, having a vehicle, we're really excited to see that a lot of the cities we work with, in addition to working to get to 100% renewable electricity, they're looking at all kinds of commitments to electrify their vehicle fleets, adopting, you know, plans to turn all of their city buses into electric buses, and, you know, making packs to work together to buy electric vehicles and bring down the costs so that we can all have access to affordable, emission-free transportation in addition to, you know, renewable energy.
The Global Climate Action Summit happened in San Francisco in the middle of September, and it kind of buzzed by me. I didn't tune into it until it had already gone by. Did you go, and were some big names also there?
I was there, and the summit was a gathering of leaders from state and local governments, as well as corporations from across the world. And it was intended to show growing ambition in the run-up to 2020, when countries will decide whether to increase their pledges to meet the terms of the Paris Climate Agreement. So I would say that the most central takeaway for me from the Global Climate Action Summit was that it really highlighted how important cities have become in global efforts to address climate change.
Right. Al Gore was there, and Tom Steyer, Van Jones, Harrison Ford, Alec Baldwin. It was a long list of people, but I think that some of the corporate guests were just as important. Do you think that corporations will honestly try and get off fossil fuels, or is this greenwashing?
I think we're already seeing that the commitments in the renewable energy space, commitments and procurement by corporations is driving new demand for renewable energy. So it is already having an impact. A lot of companies, especially some of the companies in my area, the larger tech companies like Google and Facebook and Apple, are actually buying enough renewable energy to increase the amount on the grid significantly. So these pledges, of course, need to be implemented on, but when they are, the companies that are doing them have significant purchasing power and are really signaling the way that demand is headed.
One of our guests on Radio EcoShock suggested that big fossil fuel companies and their electric industry buddies do their lobbying and propaganda at the national level. That's what's convenient for them. Why do you think this end run around the national governments is getting to be so successful?
Well, I think cities and local governments are showing that we don't need our national or federal governments to make progress on climate change. Cities and businesses and states, you know, all across the United States and really across the world are driving this change, and they have both the most to gain and from doing so, and the most to lose if we don't. So it's just common sense that cities and other local governments are going to lead the change. There's so much that cities can do. You know, in the U.S. where we work with the cities, there's so much that is within cities' control that they can do without needing any kind of sweeping federal policy to get it done. And so that's exactly what cities are doing. They're saying they're not going to wait for, you know, President Trump to take action. In fact, it doesn't matter that Trump is moving backwards on the issue of climate change. They're going to keep our commitment as a country to meet the goals of the Paris Climate Accord, and they're going to do everything within their authority to, you know, make good on those goals.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith, with our guest, Jody Van Horn, the director of the Sierra Club's Ready for 100 campaign. And this is good news for a change. Cities are promising to convert away from fossil fuels. Jody, on the second day of the Climate Action Summit, Jerry Brown's partner and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg said 27 major cities peaked in their carbon emissions by 2017. And he listed London, Berlin, Los Angeles, New York, Paris, and San Francisco. That is a start. But how do we go from peak greenhouse gas emissions in cities towards these lower carbon emissions? I mean, we've heard about promises, but what actual steps can we take?
You know, the work that cities are doing to reduce emissions and the strategies they're using to get there, committing to 100% renewable electricity, electrifying their vehicle fleets, electrifying their building sector, getting off of fossil fuels to heat and cool buildings and their homes and residents, all of these things are having a real impact today. They're pushing out fossil fuels, and they're raising the bar not only for what happens locally, but for electric utilities, for states, and for energy generators to go all in on clean and renewable power in all sectors. So I think there's really an inspiring and hopeful story and a multiplying effect of these actions that are starting to tip emissions, but are also generating a tremendous amount of demand for the clean energy future that we need to usher in as quickly as possible.
Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti claimed his city added 29,000 clean energy jobs in the last 5 years. What is the case for clean energy conversion as a boost for American jobs?
Yeah, this is really an important point, because a lot of cities are converting to renewable energy and committing to get there for a variety of reasons, and most importantly because they want to boost the local economy, they want to create jobs, and they want to improve, you know, the conditions locally. They want to improve the lives and livelihoods of people living in their communities. So we, you know, the renewable energy industry is growing and creating jobs at a rate higher than the rest of the economy. Solar has created a tremendous amount of new jobs in California and across the country. And so a city like Los Angeles that's forward-looking and thinking about how to generate economic prosperity at the local level, how to create jobs in that new economy, they're setting goals that's ensuring not only that the energy that's powering LA is coming from renewable sources, but that they're looking at, you know, how to keep and create the jobs that are going to get us there within city limits, how to make sure that that's generating and producing new opportunities for Angelenos.
Right. But according to a study released this year by the Norwegian University of Science and Technology, Los Angeles and New York City and Chicago are still in the top 10 worst carbon polluters in the world. Seoul, South Korea was number one and Guangzhou, China, number two. So big cities still have a long, long way to go. And I know, Jody, that I have listeners who are doubtful that humans can make the change in time to avoid a horrible climate time. What are your feelings about that?
Yeah, look, it is definitely not something that is happening overnight. I think, you know, what is hopeful about the actions that cities are taking is that not only are they setting very clear goals for where they need to be to reduce pollution locally, to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, to improve local health and air quality, but they're also taking the steps they need to get there. And so it's true that this is a big challenge. Cities have to tackle not only existing pollution and emissions, but they have to tackle the fact that a lot of cities are growing. And as they grow, they need to curb greenhouse gas emissions and curb energy use in the context of urban growth. So cities like Los Angeles, you know, have to tackle not only electricity, but they also have to tackle energy use in buildings. And most importantly, for a city like LA, they've got to tackle the transportation system because it's mostly those cars on the road and the oil that's being burned to fuel them that's creating pollution both locally and globally. I think what's really important is the action cities are taking to get there. You have to look at how serious and committed these cities are and how they're actions are already having an impact on the energy system. There were plans to build a new gas plant in Oregon that were defeated after the city of Portland, Oregon, and the surrounding county committed to 100% renewable energy, and now the electric company is looking to build more clean energy. So step by step, city by city, neighborhood by neighborhood, we are making progress.
Jody Van Horn, you are fluent in Spanish and have worked with Aboriginal people. Talk to us about where Indigenous people fit into the drive for 100% clean energy.
In the United States, there's a tremendous amount of renewable energy that is being produced and owned by Native Americans in the states, and it's become a major opportunity for tribes to own their own renewable energy, and wherever possible, that should be a model, that self-determination among tribes, whether it be in the United States or in Canada or across the world, to own and operate renewable energy, to generate economic prosperity, and to be independent of, you know, corporate ownership of that renewable energy or outside ownership, but really to have it owned and operated by the tribes themselves. We're seeing success stories, but there needs to be a lot more opportunity. Unfortunately, you know, what is happening now in the U.S. is that we see a tremendous amount of drilling and attacks on indigenous land through, you know, the construction of pipelines or proposed pipelines, and that needs to stop. We need to keep dirty energy in the ground, and we need to give indigenous people the respect and autonomy they deserve to preserve and protect their lands, their water, and to, if they choose to, generate their own energy, not only to meet their needs, but to generate economic opportunities for their communities.
Yeah, I think some of the Aboriginal people are trying to steer us towards a better life because they've been living well for generations before we ever came. So there's a leadership role there, and we're not paying enough attention, in my opinion.
That's right. I think across the board, policymakers need to pay attention to those communities most impacted by the changing effects of our climate, by climate change, and the impacts. They need to look at community solutions that are being generated by communities that have dealt with, you know, environmental degradation, environmental racism, the locating of coal and gas plants in their communities, the pollution and the health effects that come with that. those are communities that have long had to deal with the impacts that we are starting to feel societally today. And they have a tremendous amount of wisdom. They have a tremendous amount of innovation and really, you know, models that can help us get out of the problem if we're paying attention.
For me, a surprising hole that I found in your Sierra Club report about American cities that are progressing was Arizona. I mean, Arizona is the capital of solar energy. It should be, but it's still coal-powered, including a big coal plant up in the Four Corners there that is polluting, just as you have described. Have you heard any hopeful stories from Arizona?
You know, Arizona as a state, in terms of state policy, has been on a backwards path. It's been a very long and difficult battle with the utility and with regulators in Arizona who have attempted at every turn to quash the solar energy and the growth of a solar energy market. It's just counterintuitive. Here's a state with some of the most sun in the country, and in many regards, they're behind most others in terms of generating power from their abundant resource, the sun.
Yeah, they've got to look at Australia, where they also have abundant solar. And Australians, I think 1 in 4 homes now have solar power up on the roof. And it's not because of government encouragement or any bonuses. They just see how cheap it is and how much sense it makes, and they're doing it. So I hope that catches on. But in the meantime, Western-style consumers like myself and probably yourself to a degree will have to give up a lot, I think, to save a survivable climate. And do you picture us living the same lives but powered with solar panels and wind turbines, or do we need deeper change to make it?
I actually see things a little bit differently. I think that for a long time we believed that solving climate change was purely an obligation, that it was something we had to do and that there was going to be sacrifice involved. Whereas today, I think all of the evidence of the renewable energy transition that is underway points to the reality that this is also an opportunity. It's really an opportunity for us to live smarter and live better. If you look at, I'll give you an example of a town that we've worked very closely with, the city of Pueblo, Colorado. Pueblo has for a very long time been plagued by fluctuating and exorbitantly high energy costs. The impact of that is that you have a lot of people who can't afford to heat their homes in the winter. They end up on the streets or in the homeless shelter because they can't stay in their house without heat or without electricity. And the city of Pueblo finally decided to take it upon themselves to change this situation. It had become out of control, and it was largely due to very predatory practices by the utility and to a series of rate hikes by regulators in Colorado. So the city committed to 100% renewable energy, and now they're moving towards a plan to break up with their utility and to form a municipal utility so that they can own and control the way that power is generated and the prices that are set for it. And I think this is really a story of hope. It's a story of a community not only dealing with a lot of difficulty, but turning that difficulty into an opportunity to create local investment, to own and control the resources that the city has, and to, you know, generate energy for the residents of Pueblo in a more fair, more just, and more affordable way.
I love that story. And you didn't say anything about climate change. It's just about independence and about energy independence. And so that's a fantastic story.
That's right. It's about economic transition. You know, Pueblo was a steel town, and in the 80s, they lost a tremendous amount of jobs, and it's been economically depressed ever since. But they have an abundant amount of solar and wind. They've got a new, relatively new Vestas wind manufacturing plant just outside of Pueblo. And so this is an industry that can bring jobs back to a town like Pueblo that went through, you know, a post-industrial crash and now is on the rebound, both in terms of the power it's able to provide to its residents and the jobs it's able to create with that power.
Do you think that the grassroots structure of the Sierra Club chapters maybe helped your group see this potential for city-by-city change instead of trying to lobby at the national level for climate action?
Absolutely. The Sierra Club is the largest, oldest grassroots organization in the environmental organization in the United States, and we have over 3 million members. We have 62 chapters, and there are about 10,000 members of the Sierra Club who actually hold titles within the organization at a volunteer level. So it's a very active grassroots base, and those are the folks that actually said to us, we want to make this change in our community, and we need support to move our communities to 100% renewable energy. So we always believe, fundamentally at our core, we believe in the power of grassroots organizing. We believe that social change happens because communities demand it, and this was a campaign that was just tailor-made for the structure and that, you know, big volunteer base of the Sierra Club to run a campaign to get to your city or town to 100% renewable energy anywhere there was appetite to do so.
Okay, so how can our American listeners get their mayors to get on this clean energy pathway? What can we do?
That's a great question. The first thing to do is to connect with us, go to the Ready for 100 campaign website at readyfor100.org. You can look there to see if the city or town that you're living in is already committed to 100% renewable energy. If it's not, you can look and see if it has an active campaign, a group of local volunteers and activists that are working to get the city committed. There will be a contact there that you can reach out to directly and figure out how to get plugged in. And if there isn't an existing campaign, then we look forward to hearing from you and helping you start one.
This is really inspiring. It makes me think maybe we can do this. So how do people get the Ready for 100% 2018 case study report? Is it free? Do we have to join the Sierra Club to get it?
It's totally free, and we would love to have you join the Sierra Club, but you don't need to do that to get the case studies. You can go to our website at readyfor100.org, and you can download it for free there. And I definitely recommend reading through. There's a lot of great information there that will continue to make you hopeful about the direction that we're headed.
From California, you've been listening to the director of the Sierra Club's Ready for 100 campaign, Jody Van Horn. I'll put links to all of this in my show blog at ecoshock.org, and I got my copy of the new Sierra Club report from sierraclub.org. Jody, thank you so much for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.